That much. I'm going to be just giving some thoughts, suggestions, ruminations, dreams I've been having about the future of deception detection research, and mainly intended for students in the crowd, I think, people who are thinking about what they might do in their future deception detection careers. Before I get into my top 10 list, I do want to confess something. And it's a confession. Dan talked about the Jewish guy's confession. My transgression is not quite the same as that guy, for good or bad. But I landed in Heathrow Airport 4 days ago. First conversation I had in the UK, I lied through my teeth. I get in the cab, cabbie looks back. First time in the UK? And I said, yes it is. I have no idea why I said that. I've been in the UK numerous times. And so it was an hour-long ride to the hotel, and this single seed of a lie grew into a wide web of lies. By the time I reached the hotel, I could not see out the cab window. The weaving of webbing had gotten so weavy and webby. Couldn't see anything. So I don't know why I lied to that cabbie. It turned into quite an entertaining conversation. But keeping that in mind, that might influence the credibility you give to my top 10 suggestions for lie detection. So there's lots left to learn about lies. One of the big things is, why the hell did I lie like that? I have no idea. Lots of experts in the crowd, maybe you can tell me. Billions of things still to learn about lies. It's good. That's good for the future of lie detection students who are doing the research in the area. I've got a top 10 list, no particular order. And like I said, you'll like some of them, maybe you'll dislike some of them, maybe you won't give a shit about any of them. I don't know, it doesn't matter. We'll see in the discussion. So my top 10, number 10, is around flipping a coin. And Aldert referred to this in his presentation. We've heard, I think, in several presentations, the notion that lie detectors essentially flip a coin when they try to detect lies, 50-54%, you know, whatever, depending on the meta-analysis. I think that's a very sad statement. I mean, it's technically true, but for students going into the field, it just sounds so dismal and we just flip a coin, we just kind of suck at detecting lies. And I think really people would acknowledge it's a lot more nuanced than that, right? So I think there's particular targets, I'll call them, who have characteristics that lead observers to make biased decisions, whether it's that they're lying or telling the truth, that we as observers bring our own biases to the table, and depending on the nature of the interaction, you can get a very accurate set of assessments, or you get a very inaccurate set of assessments. You throw them in together, and yes, we're flipping a coin, but I think where the science has been moving is identifying the nature of targets and observers and the interactions. We heard some about that this morning as well, with synchrony. So I'm going to introduce each point, and then I'm going to come to a few questions that arise from that central point that people might think about or we might discuss later on. I have in the target section there really cool finding by the late Maureen O'Sullivan, 2003, that individuals who happen to have an untrustworthy looking mug, and one of the features of the face that suggests untrustworthiness, downturned eyebrows like mine. You happen to look like that, you're not going to win any political races. Politicians who win tend to have sort of upturned, you know, Bill Clinton eyebrows. But so if you have an individual who looks untrustworthy and they make 10 statements and half of the statements are truthful and half of the statements are deceptive and you have observers looking at them, they're probably going to say deceptive more than honest. And so some of them are going to be accurate, some of them are not. I think we need to be looking at subtypes of liars, and Marcus Juotis is going to be giving a presentation showing a reliable set of findings that there are subtypes of liars, some very transparent and some very, very skilled. So I think we need to identify who those are, how particular interviewers are able to detect lies with those groups, who are the best interviewers. I got cut off here at the bottom, I don't know what the format is going on there. Who are the best interviewers at detecting lies? What can they tell us about the strategies they use? Aldert and other groups are developing active strategies for uncovering lies, but there are some interviewers who are better than others, and we need to learn from them as well in moving forward. Okay, what the hell is this now? Okay, so, yeah, this is all I'm going to have to say about this. We've been hearing more and more about the cognitive approach to detecting lies, and I'm a big fan, big advocate of the stuff that Aldert was talking about earlier. I think we need to do that moving forward, move away from the passive observation tasks that we've been using for decades. But one outcome of the increasingly dominant cognitive perspective is sort of the downfall, in a sense, of the affective or the emotional perspective. And frankly, and I'm using that term in honor of Mark Frank, frankly, I don't think that's a good idea. And I think Frank, in a past paper that I was reading, said any lie that's really worth caring about, any kind of big lie of consequence, will have both affective and cognitive elements. And Judy Burgum was talking about this earlier as well. And cognitive and emotional elements that lead to specific predictions about behavioral outcomes. The elephant in the room at a conference like this, I think it's right there. Let's say hypothetically, there's an individual in our field who people have a perception that he or she may have exaggerated their claims about a particular approach to lie detection. And let's also say, hypothetically, that the U.S. TSA put into place a program of detecting lies or detecting threats that was an abysmal failure. Let's just say, hypothetically, those two things happen. And all of a sudden, there's a huge skepticism on the whole emotional approach, I suppose, affective approach. The idea that this person's bad and therefore all of his or her ideas are also bad. I think that's problematic, and I think it's become a contagion, in a sense, that sort of is moving away from the empirical foundation now that the affective approach has, especially with high-stakes lies. So in terms of a research objective or priority here, how do cognitive and emotional factors interact to produce behavioral outcomes in liars? So it's not one camp versus another from my perspective. We have to be doing integrative stuff like Judy was talking about earlier. Okay, 5 minutes. Does increasing cognitive load also... Okay, emotion... Yeah, we'll move on to the next one. Number 8. This is a very quick one. I think we need more research on high-stakes deception. And the notion that stakes don't matter, that we're hearing here and there in the field, that if you look at low stakes and highs, there's no behavioral differences or they're not easier caught than one or the other. I think that's overblown because there are so few studies of truly high-stakes lies in the literature at this point. So we needed to be developing new paradigms for studying high-stakes lies. It's not easy. I don't have any particular recommendations, but that's what students, I think, need to be thinking about. And I also think we need to be thinking about high-stakes lie detectors. So judges and jurors and how they are going about assessing credibility is something that we really haven't spent enough attention with. Are groups better than individuals at detecting lies? This is a fascinating new finding, just published now. We don't know if this is a robust finding. If it is, it has a real potential application. What are the dynamics of collective lie detection that leads to that enhanced performance? Does collective lie detection increase critical thinking? That's one possibility, versus an individual. And if we do this, we take this forward and we interview in groups. Aldert was talking about collective interviewing. We have multiple suspects. But what about multiple interviewers who have an ability to co-interview? And again, how do judges versus juries assess credibility? This finding has implications for our understanding there. Number 6, indirect or unconscious lie detection. Controversial in a sense. There's a number of different paradigms that have examined this idea that humans sort of pick up on cues unconsciously or indirectly without conscious deliberation, and that leads them to more accurate assessments of credibility than direct assessments. Lots of different papers right there. Certainly there's some controversy around that, but remaining research questions, one perspective that's been placed upon those findings is the evolutionary perspective. So I think if that's an appropriate perspective, we might see some interesting findings with infants or children evaluating credibility. Let's go down that path, okay? Does this finding extend to one-to-one interview situations moving forward with active approaches? And what behavioral signs are observers picking up on to guide these indirect assessments? We have really no idea what it is that is guiding them. Number five. Very quickly, more research on police lies. This is an interesting line of research. Julia Shaw is here. She has this interesting finding published for her PhD that the majority of people in an experimental setting interviewed on multiple occasions with suggestive interview tactics can be led to recall a crime, committing a crime that they never committed. This has potential enormous consequences in the legal system. We really don't know how often this occurs, how many people are sitting in jail, not thinking they committed a crime, but they really didn't, and it's a result of police lying to them. In Canada, police lie to suspects all the time. I don't believe that's the case in the UK, but certainly North America, it's a very common thing. So what aspects of common police interviews are the most dangerous in terms of that? Like, if we look at the Reid technique, what aspects of that are more likely or less likely to lead to false memories? Do modern techniques like PEACE maintain the integrity of suspect memories relative to, say, Reid? We look at the Innocence Project, what proportion of the false confessions in that project are coerced, internalized, where the suspect came to falsely believe that he or she had committed the crime. Number four, very quickly, we need to look at long-term effects of training. So we're moving into training police and investigators in detecting lies, empirically based approaches. We don't know, we have no idea whether a month or 6 months or a year later, any positive effects are maintained. I think we need to start looking at that. And if they're not being maintained, how can we change that situation to make them long-term? Okay, number three, sorry, I could guess what this is. Sacred cow of CBCA. So I think a lot of people in the field are coming to the conclusion that verbal approaches to lie detection have a great deal of promise and a lot of empirical support. I think we need to be combining automated approaches like Loop with approaches like CBCA, more sort of subjective approaches. We might have some good fortune there in improving lie detection. CBCA has been around for decades. I don't think Undeutsch would care too much if we dropped a few items. Consistently, certain items in CBCA are found not to reliably discriminate truths from lies. And I think it's time we start adjusting this thing and really making it into a more valid tool. We keep finding that, yeah, liars tend to show fewer of the CBCA items than truth tellers, but there's always some failing items there that need to go. Sorry. How to spot a psychopath? A lot of my work is with correctional populations. I started off in the clink before moving into academia and got lied to very, very frequently, very successfully by a host of characters. And so I became interested in psychopathy. How can you spot a psychopath? Can you tell by the way they look? Any psychopaths in the crowd? No, you can't tell them by they look like the rest of us. There's new research showing that you can tell them by their smell, however. I don't know if you guys heard about that. Psychopaths, what do they smell like? Slightly nutty with a hint of cray-cray. Not true, but anyway. But I think we need more research on psychopathy and lying, because the lies that psychopaths tell, the manipulation they use, some of the most damaging deception anywhere, okay? And I'm not talking about, you know, necessarily full-blown psychopaths, but subclinical psychopaths in the population, in corporations and so on. The fraud and deception they use has enormous consequences throughout society. New findings showing that psychopaths are better able to mimic emotional expressions than the rest of us, even though they don't experience much emotion, which is pretty fascinating. And I think the stuff we were hearing earlier about synchrony and mimicry really plays into that. So a couple of research issues that come out of that. What is it about psychopaths' language and body language that leads to the perception of trust? People trust psychopaths, and they you know, think about Bernie Madoff, people giving their life savings to this guy, billions and millions of dollars. And then it all fell apart, and it turns out he was defrauding them the entire time.
Time up?
Okay. Anyway, there's no number one in this list, because as I told you at the beginning, I am a practiced deceiver. So you need to leave your truth bias at home and don't trust anybody, and that's my talk.